Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey guys, welcome back to Soul Sisters. Jessie Katz here. I am joined by one of my favorite colleagues in the office, Yemi, who is one of our brilliant interns in the video department, and she records a lot of these episodes that you listen to, and she edits some of them that you see on YouTube, and she's just another kick-ass lady that we have working with us at Billboard right now. How are you, Yemi?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good. I asked Yemi to come on and do this intro with me because she is a big fan of the guest that we have on today's episode, who is Miss Leanne Womack. And Yemi, tell me about your feelings about Leanne Womack, and in particular, her big hit.
I Hope You Dance.
Yes.
I actually have a very fond memory of this song because we used to make goodbye videos in college to different people who graduated above us.
Uh-huh.
And this was our constant go-to.
Okay.
I have no clue why. I think it just brings on so many emotions and so many feelings that you're just like, oh no.
Yeah, I Hope You Dance is a great metaphor for I hope you go on and do beautiful things in your life.
Yeah, it's always a friendly goodbye.
Right. That's very cute. How many of those videos do you think that you made?
5 at least.
Okay.
And like 3 out of the 5 were, that was the song.
Yeah. You don't remember how you guys chose that song?
My friend Shannon, actually, it was her favorite song that her mom used to sing to her.
Uh-huh.
And she showed it to me one time and I was like, this is it.
That's the one.
Yes.
That's the tearjerker. Yeah, it's a very inspirational song. I think it's also played at lots of weddings. Anyway, so when Leanne was booked on this show originally, I didn't know much about her beyond that song, as I think a lot of people, that's their experience with her. But when I started doing my research and talking to some friends of mine who are more in the know about country music than I am, I realized that she's actually a bona fide country artist. She writes beautiful songs. And her music has actually just gotten better and better. And she talks on this episode about how she really, like, found her more authentic voice since I Hope You Dance. And, you know, she's very grateful for that song. It certainly opened a lot of doors for her. Mm-hmm. But her music is just, it's just gotten more and more amazing. And her new album is out this week. It's called The Lonely, The Lonesome, and The Gone. And I'm obsessed with it. It's awesome. So anyway, I'll let you guys hear this conversation that Dara and I had with Leanne when she was in New York a few weeks ago. And the album comes out this Friday, and you should listen to it. I think after you hear this episode, you'll definitely want to. So here's Leanne Womack on Soul Sisters. Leanne Womack's on Soul Sisters.
Woo! Yay!
Woo! How are you?
I'm good.
Yeah? How was your time in New York?
It's hectic.
Yeah.
The traffic is so bad right now. It's not bad. That it's not always bad, because it always is, but like now it's crazy.
Yeah, there's a UN convention. Right. Trump is here.
General Assembly nightmare. Wait. For everybody.
Yeah.
We made it.
I just want to say, you are such an amazing musician and songwriter to a level that I didn't fully appreciate, I have to admit, until I was getting ready for you to come on the show.
Oh, that's
and
good.
I
that's
like goodness. Dug deeper into your music than I ever had before. And I was talking to a friend of mine who lives in Nashville, and she works for Sony now. She worked at the Country Music Hall of Fame for a while, and she was like, you think you know Leanne Womack, but like listen to her most recent albums and you will see she is like verified country kick-ass artist. And I was like, okay. And I dug into it and I was like, oh, she's right. Like, you are the real deal. So I'm very excited that you're here, and I'm very excited for this new album that you have coming out this fall, because I can only imagine from what I've heard from it and what I've heard about it so far that it is like just even further entrenched in like all the history of country music that you've absorbed, and you've these people that you've worked with along the way, and like I feel like you've just been building up this huge trajectory that is like exploding in this moment. Do you feel that way? That's my impression of you.
Yes. Love that.
So now you can tell us how it feels from your perspective.
Okay. Yes. So I grew up in East Texas and listening to like real country music, which people don't even know anymore. You know, I mean, but real country music is like has a lot of substance, and it's really soulful.
Yeah.
And so for this record, I went back to Texas to make the record, to record the record. I had written all over the country, just on different writing retreats and things like that, but went back there to record and wanted to capture, you know, all that stuff. The studio's in Houston. It's a very eclectic city. I was telling them earlier that it's the most culturally diverse city in the country. And it, like, if you walk down the Galleria, or we went to the zoo, you hardly hear English spoken.
Oh, really?
You hear all kinds of languages. Yeah. So, and then when you're getting to the music, I mean, it's a huge rap scene. It's a huge blues, or there has been as big as blues scenes get.
Yeah.
Big blues scene out of there. You have everything from Lightnin' Hopkins to George Jones.
Yeah.
Who were both very, very soulful artists, you know, Janis Joplin, Don Henley, all these East Texas musicians, you know. And so I kind of wanted to just showcase all of that in this record.
Right. Yeah, because you can get bluesy. Like, you have that in you in spades. And I think that's some of the best kind of country.
Absolutely.
Is that, like, overlaps with that.
I love it. Yeah. Yes, I agree. I think George Jones, to me, is a soul singer.
Right.
I mean, he... You play that guy for anybody in any genre of music that, and I've done it, that aren't familiar with his stuff, and they go, oh, wait a minute. You know, I mean, he digs deep. It's way down in there. And so, that you know, that's the kind of musician I wanted to be.
Yeah. So was there writing happening when you were in Houston already, or had it had the record mainly been written then?
Yeah.
Okay.
We went into the studio with what we were going to cut.
So it was really the energy of the city that informed the recording process, not as much the writing, but the recording. And you had a bunch of musicians that you hadn't worked with so much before. Is that correct?
No, I had worked with, in one way or another, I had worked with all of them. Yeah.
But you all got to sort of stay in that city together. Like, did that feel like a retreat? Did you, like, hang out after the sessions? Or, was it a bonding situation?
You live in Nashville now, just for context?
Yes, but we still have a house in Houston and one up further in East Texas, and because my husband and I are both from East Texas.
Got it.
But
you didn't meet there, did you?
No, we met in Nashville. Yeah. You're right. So, I took all these guys down there, and we just camped out. And we talked a lot about the history of the studio that we were recording in and the history of, that area.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about the history of that studio?
Yeah. It's called Sugar Hill Studios, and it was Gold Star. It was a Gold Star studio, which I think there was one in L.A. and one in New York. And they have these particular kinds of echo chambers. And I have a little video of it posted on my Twitter and Instagram. But it's really cool the way they run things. And I wanted that sound on the record. And I'm very much... I love the 60s and 70s, love that country music. And so, to me, there's something about the Texas music scene and the Southern California country music scene, you know, that are linked a little bit. Because you got, of course, you have Merle Haggard from Oklahoma and Buck Owens from Sherman, Texas, who went out to L.A. and Bakersfield, you know, and all that. So those two are kind of tied, and I wanted that vibe.
Yeah. I feel like I can hear that a little bit on the single Hollywood that's out already. Mm-hmm. There's kind of like that echoey, like, background vocal thing happening that sounds kind of Southern California, you know? It's cool.
Yeah, it has also a modern feel, too.
Yes.
Yeah, and it has this kind of ambient stuff happening.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's cool. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that I wanted to get that. And at that particular studio, I mean, you had Jones cut all of his early hits. And then you had Willie Nelson cut there. He cut Nightlife, the song Nightlife that he wrote, he cut there. And I saw some tapes from Stevie Ray Vaughan. Freddie Fender did a lot of his stuff there. So just on and on. There's just some really soulful country music that had been made there.
Yeah. So
now they do mostly rap music. So it's all these rap artists. You know, the rap scene in Houston is huge.
Right.
And it's, again, it's like it's real. It's not pop rap. Like,
yes.
You know, it's like real gritty stuff. And,
uh-huh.
And so I had fun hanging out with all those guys.
They were there when you were there?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, were they listening to your recording?
Oh, yeah. We were like, come, I mean, please come in, you know. And yeah, yeah.
Did you get any feedback?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, one of them said, will you sing on my thing?
I was going to say,
oh,
you should feature on a rap track. Yeah.
Amazing. It was a lot of fun. But, you know, the best thing about being there and not Nashville or L.A.,
mm-hmm.
to record was that those guys, they don't they're not beholden to the rules, sort of, you know.
Yeah.
and the way things are done
right
on major labels, they get up every morning, they go to the studio, and they're wide open, their minds are wide open, you know.
Yeah.
and they're happy, and they're not like, you know, we've got to get this record out and we've got to, you know, it's not like that. It's like they make music for the sake of making music. Mm-hmm. And so to be surrounded by those kind of people
mm-hmm.
while you're recording, you know, you might be surprised to know that that's not the way it usually is.
Yeah, well, and I mean, can you talk a little bit about your complicated history with trying to play by those rules mm-hmm. and make that album when they're asking you to make that album, right? Because like this is a journey that you've been on that's brought you back to Texas, right?
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
it didn't always feel as free as it does right now, I would imagine.
Mm-mm. And I didn't realize that, you know, there's things you don't know. I'm going to grow up, I'm going to be a country singer, I'm going to sign a record deal and you know, and all that. And you don't think about, or I didn't, my kids who do it now,
uh-huh.
they knew all that when they started making records, you know, but I didn't.
They're all making records?
Well, I have two girls, and one of them's writing, she wants to go in the studio and start her record. The other one, Warner Brothers put a record out on her this year. Where are we? Yeah, this year.
That's
so
amazing.
She's touring in UK right now.
Okay. So they're a little savvier.
Are you guys involved in that?
What?
Are you guys involved as musical parents?
Frank produced Aubrey's record.
That's awesome.
And I'm sure he probably will Anna's too. I don't know. And then I try to stay. People go, oh, do you give her advice? I go, no, she gives me advice. She grew up in the business. She's a lot smarter and more savvy about it than I ever was. So I don't give a lot of advice. And plus, she has a great manager, and I let her manager do her job. And then, because if I start getting in there and doing that, then who's going to be mom? You know, I'm not letting anybody else be mom. So I try to just give her advice like on personal things.
Yeah.
But that's, you really grew up in the business too. I mean, you went to music school, not grew up with it in your home necessarily, although your father was a DJ? Radio DJ.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I mean,
that's a different side of the industry.
Side, totally.
Yeah.
Right. But then you went to music school and music business school and interned in Nashville. I mean, you've seen it from a very young age.
I was luckier than most, because by the time I got my record deal, I had, my first husband was touring musician. He played with Ricky Skaggs and others, and he road managed Ricky for a while, and so I got to see a lot of that. So by the time I had my own band, and I knew what I needed in a road manager, I knew what that job required, I knew what it was like also to be a wife and have a child at home while your husband was out on the road. So I have a lot of empathy for the wives of my players, you know, and spouses of my players, and so there's a lot of things that I knew by the time I got my record deal.
Yeah. I have a question about when you were in music school. You were at Belmont, right?
I did go to Belmont.
For part of the time. And you were studying music business. How many other women were studying with you?
A lot.
Were there?
Most of the people I went to school with went back home, though.
Okay.
Most of the people did not stay in Nashville and end up working in the... A few, but not a lot. And the program was a lot smaller then, because we're talking, you know, years ago. But before that, I went to school at South Plains College, which is in Levelland, Texas. And they had an actual, like, I was in a band, so we would rehearse, then we would go out and do a gig, we would get on the bus, go do a gig, set up, do the gig, tear down, go, you know. So I actually got an education in
being
what I'm
touring,
doing.
Yeah. Was it a country band?
It was a country band, and they had several country bands and several bluegrass bands.
Okay.
A lot of very talented kids at that school and teachers.
Uh-huh.
Still, and their program has grown by leaps and bounds, too. And they have a television studio, and they have a recording studio, which I recorded while I was there and all that. I made a record. So that was really cool.
Was your intention when you were in school to continue in the business, or
what do you mean?
Well, in the music business, because you went to school, you studied it, but then you had your kids, right?
Right.
And then you went back to music?
Right.
Well, was that always the plan?
I was, singing and writing that whole time.
The whole time?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So you never actually stopped.
Mm-mm.
Got it. Okay.
No, I went to Belmont, which has, like I said, their program is huge now, too, and they have a studio and all that. But honestly, I went there because it was in Nashville. And the dorm was right there on campus. And I was 17 when I graduated from high school. So I was young, and my parents they didn't want me just moving off somewhere, waiting tables and getting.
Right.
So
instead of saying, I'm moving to Nashville, you're like, I'm going to go to school.
Smart. How much does Nashville, the Nashville that you know now and you describe as this industry sort of machine within a system, how much does that resemble what it was when you were there as a student? I mean, how much has this transformation really occurred, or has that sort of always been Nashville?
You mean of it becoming like this industry town?
Yeah, I mean, it's always been an industry town, right? But like, has it sort of succumbed more to pressures of studio of labels and just like commercial, pop hit machine?
It is more like a product now.
Right.
And when I hear stories about when, like, Willie Nelson was a songwriter in town, I mean, those are the guys that built that town, songwriters.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's just, I've looked at some of the acts, and they seem like products.
Right.
Yeah. And that's a shame, I think, because that's what set Nashville apart, So.
Yeah. We've had a few guests on the show, actually, younger artists who went down to Nashville, and that was their big break. Like, something brought them down there because they were starting to get momentum, and then they just completely felt like their personality and their music was being taken over and repackaged, and they had to be like, whoa. Like, Maggie Rose, talked a lot about on the show, and they, kind of had a crisis of identity upon, their first year or two in Nashville. Like, this isn't what I came here for, and I don't want to be in this machine, So I think it's tricky for people to learn how to navigate that.
Right. Seems like there's a split between it's such a songwriter-driven city, and, the energy there is so, about songwriting, and yet it's not maybe necessarily as personal-driven. It's sort of, commercial-minded as opposed to this authentic thing that you imagine, Nash.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Well, for instance, and just to make it really, really simple, you look back at in the 60s and you had a song. Oh, who wrote this song? One writer, Willie Nelson.
Right.
Maybe a second writer.
Right.
You look at things now, it's like 10 writers on a song.
Yeah.
It's like, what? That's.
What does that do to, what do you credit that to?
Money. I mean, they're just. They're making, a product. And it is a
more
thing.
Writers, less instruments.
Yeah.
Fewer instruments.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's strange.
I'm glad to hear y'all say that because that's what.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and that's what was so. I mean, so refreshing. It sounds weird to say refreshing to hear all these live musicians, but your record is so full of life, of real live recording, and you can feel that, the like actual interplay happening between musicians. It's like hearing those live drums, and it's you can tell the difference, and it makes for a really exciting experience.
Oh, I'm glad. Thank you. I'm glad to hear you say that.
It's funny to say that it's unusual.
Yeah, I know. So you must feel that when you're recording it, right? Like that energy, like that must just translate straight to the record.
Very much so, yeah. I mean, Frank, my husband, produced the record, and he insisted that I be on the floor with the musicians when we were recording.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How did your first album happen? Let's go back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let's see. I had written some songs and I went around and found some songs, like Jamie O'Hara song. I was a writer at Sony Tree Publishing.
Okay.
So
you were writing for other people first?
Yeah, but I wasn't getting any cuts or anything,
right?
But they basically signed me because they knew I was gonna, they figured I was gonna get a record deal.
Got it.
So I was writing these extremely country songs, you know, like on my first record I had one called Am I the Only Thing You've Done Wrong. My husband was out on the road and I felt like a loser, you know, sitting at home doing nothing, and he was all over the world and all over TV and everything, and so I wrote this song called Am I the Only Thing You've Done Wrong. And so it was, country, you know? So I had to write them, you know, because I couldn't really find them. And then I started asking people, you know, will you write some country stuff for me? And so that's how the whole first record came about.
Okay.
And basically because of the song, Am I the Only Thing You've Done Wrong? Somebody at the label heard it. And
that was it. Who was that first husband?
Oh, that's Aubrey's dad. My daughter's name is Aubrey Sellers, and so her dad is Jason Sellers, who's an artist on RCA, and he's written a lot of hit songs for Kelly Clarkson and different people, and so that's her dad, and that was my first husband, and
Got it. Did you ever record that song? Am I the Only Thing You've
Oh, yeah, it's on the first record.
Okay, yeah. Is it easier to be married to a producer than to another artist?
Yes. Yes, it is.
It's easier to collaborate.
Well, yes, it is. It is.
Maybe among some other personality traits that we don't have to get into. That's funny. And then the ball was rolling. And then, I mean, how did you feel like going album to album? Did you feel like you were moving in the direction you wanted to move? Or at a certain point, did you feel like you were being pushed in a direction you weren't comfortable with? Like what?
I was very, very lucky that I had people around me who appreciated what I was and what I wanted to do, and saw that there was that it was kind of a wide open because nobody else was doing it, you know. So I had Mark Wright to produce, and he was also worked at the label, and then Sheila Shipley ran the label. This was Decca Records, which was a division of MCA, which is Universal.
Mm-hmm.
And I had John Lytle, who was head of promotion, who was from Texas and loves that kind of music. So everybody was like, when I said, I've got this song Never Again Again, I want Ricky Skaggs to sing the harmony on it, I want fiddles, I want steel guitars.
Yeah.
You know, most people would have said, yeah, I don't care, you're not doing that. But my label went, okay. Well, let's just give it a shot and see.
Wow.
And so we knew it wasn't a number one radio song, but it told people exactly who I was and where I came from and what my foundation was.
Totally.
What record was that? Which one was that?
Never Again Again. That was on the first,
okay.
First record.
And then continuing on, you sort of, was there more of a push and encouragement to go a little bit more mainstream pop commercial?
Yeah, a little bit. Well, we found a song called I Hope You Dance.
Right.
And
a little
we
song
could
you
both
heard.
Tell stories of that. I mean,
everybody.
Yeah, we could go on and on about that song. And just I was listening to it again recently, and it's like, it's just so good. It just says all of the things. It's like, you know, someone who has like a calling card song, a song that's they're known for forever. You know, it could be any number of sort of moods. You know, we just interviewed Melissa Manchester, Don't Cry Out Loud is one of my favorite songs of all time. I grew up with it, not really knowing what it was about. But now, as an adult, it's kind of a tough, it's kind of a tough hang. Like, Don't Cry Out Loud, you know? Your song that you're forever now identified with is such a positive, hopeful, wonderful song. I mean, and that's like, that's at least, I don't know how you feel about being tied to such a, to one thing that everyone knows you for, but it's a great one.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be somewhat of an albatross at times, you know, but like you said, I go, you know, at least it is, it's not a ditty, you know, it's a real song and it's a good song and it has helped people so much. And that was a double-edged sword. I love that as a mother, you know, to hear you say that. I just, you know, oh, I just want to hug you. You know, I mean, I just so glad to hear that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I also had people that would, I was the girl who sang Never Again Again. Am I the only thing you done wrong? Drinking, cheating songs, you know? So all of a sudden I had this positive, hopeful song with all these lush string stuff on it. And people started coming to me almost like I was supposed to be Billy Graham or something. Right. I'm like, I cannot even get myself together. I don't know how I'm going to help you.
How did it happen?
That's funny.
How did it happen?
Well, Mark Wright, who was my producer at the time, you know, produced it and made it real lush and everything. Uh-huh. Now, I think in his mind, he thought, I can cross this thing over.
Yeah.
And it'll be a pop hit and we are off to the races, you know. That was never mentioned to me. So I'm driving. It's dark at night. I'm by myself in a car in East Texas. And my best friend, who lives in New Jersey now, who I grew up with, she called me and said, I mean, I don't know if I'm crazy or what, but I swear to you, I am sitting here right now listening to you on a pop station. And I went, no, you're crazy. That's not what. And wow, that's how I found out. No.
That's crazy.
So then they decide they're going to bring me in the studio and I'm going to re-sing it, but sound less country.
Wow.
Whoa, really?
So they bring in this consultant person. He comes in and I go in and I start singing. And I swear to you, I sang about two lines. They stopped and he pushed the button and goes, come on in. And I came in and they go, This isn't gonna work. I mean, they couldn't make me sound less country.
Less country.
And this is with the same label that
should be a badge of honor for a Texas girl, right? I can't sound less country when they're paying me.
I was so disappointed in myself, you know. But yeah, and it's
the
same
label that was encouraging you to say that. It was like, go ahead, do your fiddle, and you know, do your vibe. And now they're saying, okay,
yeah,
but
they figure out how to make a little money.
Well,
then.
And also, I think they wanted to give the treatment that they thought it deserved for, you know, a different market, whatever. So, you know, I think, ironically, I think there was some music. There was some thought of music going on in his mind, too, about that. So,
right, because if it were a country song, a more of a country song, I don't know if it would have been my graduation song. Or my prom song, you know?
Yeah,
It really did make
the
a difference.
The mass appeal, yeah. Right. So, I mean, I know a lot of people think, well, she probably regrets doing that. I don't regret doing that song because I get to be a part of people's lives. Graduations, wedding, births, even deaths, things like this. People associate that song, you know, to their lives. And so how many artists get to have a song like that?
Right.
Yeah, that's rarefied air.
Absolutely. And does that now, having that, make it now easier to do the other stuff? I mean, now that you've, it sort of laid the foundation for you to say, and it took you really far. I mean, it made your name in the mainstream world. And now you're able to say, I can do whatever I want to do and in an easier, more relaxed way.
Now, immediately following, though, you know.
I'm sure it pigeonholes you at first. Right.
Yeah. And they kept wanting to, you know, of course they want to repeat that success.
Right.
But, you know, you as an artist, you just, I mean, unfortunately, I never made decisions about money. I just never thought, you know, if I did this, I could sell this many records or whatever. There have been times when I wish I could be more business-minded like that. But it's like I'm motivated by the music.
Yeah. But that's when you see artists making huge missteps when they do something that's super calculated like that. And they're like trying to ride the wave of something and it fails. And then everyone's like, no, like it's so clear why you did that. Yeah. Just be true to, you know. So like it's hard to do what you're doing, what you decided to do. But the payoff will be so much greater, you know.
And I was lucky to be in a position where I could, you know, right. So,
wow. Yeah. Respect.
It can be, like I said, it can be an albatross, the song can, but it also brought me a lot of fans that I wouldn't have had.
Was there otherwise. A time during the heyday of it when it first came out that you sort of lost the perspective that you would have wanted to be something else and you sort of leaned into like, this is awesome, I'm a pop star?
No.
What do you credit that to?
I think I was a little bit older when I signed my record deal, and I think I didn't really enjoy a lot of what came with that.
Fame-wise, like notoriety-wise, or music, what you had to sing musically?
Fame, notoriety. Also, like I enjoy playing theaters that were built for acoustics.
Yeah.
Not
arena.
Buildings that were built to play basketball in.
Yeah. Same as someone in the audience.
Yeah. I can't. And like, yeah, you can make a lot more money doing that. But it's like, I don't know. I can't.
Yeah.
I do think that there's something in me that I'm unable to do it. Uh-huh. I'm unable to make decisions based on business things. Terrible. That's why I have managers, and thank God for them, because I cannot do it.
But you didn't at the time ever say, I'm not going to do this. I mean, you knew, like, whether or not you knew that was going to blow up, you were ready to go for it.
Yeah.
And they said, sing it this way.
Because I didn't know I hated those things until I had them.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But would you say to a younger artist in your position who was starting out, would you advise them any differently? To say, like, you know, this song might propel you into a world that might not feel comfortable, but it's going to make for a career that's much more doable, or like, you know, it sets you up in the long run.
I'm not good at giving advice. And so I don't think I would give them advice about anything really, except follow your gut, because that is the best thing you can do, because there is a formula for commercial success. But if they're an artist, they don't want that anyway, you know. Mm-hmm. And the things that come with that is not.
Yeah, I was just talking to someone the other day.
More money does not make you happy. It just doesn't.
Yeah. And everyone has their own path to success. And the only thing that I've seen consistent amongst most people that I admire who are successful is hard work. And that's it. Otherwise, everything else is just like the way you find it, the luck that you found, the people you met that helped you, like all these other
hard work that you love.
Intangible things. Yeah, but the hard work, and that's the thing you can control. Yeah.
Right, right.
But otherwise, it is hard to give advice because, you know, you had a very specific route that you wouldn't have predicted for yourself, and everyone's going to have that for themselves.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, follow your gut. That's a good one, too. Yeah. And now here you are. With this beautiful new album coming out, product of your gut and your hard work and all those other things. Yeah. So you're going to be touring on it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Awesome. Are you excited for that?
Very.
Yeah.
Very excited. It's fun music to sing.
Uh-huh.
It's easy for me because this is what I do.
Yeah.
So it's easy to deliver it.
Uh-huh.
Well, have there been challenges since the acclaim for your last record, your 2014 record, The Way I'm Living, was deemed as one of your best, you know, like a true, she's really being true to herself. It's like an outstanding record. Did that pose any challenges for the next one because of such a high bar?
Always.
It's a good problem to have.
Right. But was there anything, did it focus you more and say like, okay, what can I do differently here? Like, was there any lesson you took away from that success?
Right. Or why did people respond so well to that one that will carry over?
You know what? Frank and I both said, okay, we're on to something. We need to go further in that direction.
Because Frank produced that one.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. Yeah.
Further in sort of the, like, just dig into the Americana, the blues, the soul, and kind of darker elements almost.
The Leanne of it, you know, be more like I really, like me.
Yep.
You know, so.
The Leanne of it. Yeah. I like that.
Hey, people talk about themselves in the third person, but
right. No, but everyone should say that about themselves. Right. Insert your own name there, right? Exactly. Like, that's what you should be making. You should be able to say that about everything that you put out. And that goes back to being your authentic self. Like, that's the whole point of it.
Mm-hmm. And it feels it. You can tell. It's so soulful. It's so, like, personal soul.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good.
So, congratulations.
Thank
We're excited for you. You're going to be playing in old theaters like you enjoy?
We were just talking about that. We're getting it all together right now, but
cool.
Exciting. Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah. Well, I hope we can catch you somewhere.
I hope so.
We're going to come to this listening party tonight to hear the record on this crazy sound
system. I haven't heard it.
October.
No?
No. We're very excited.
They just got the test pressing like a couple of days ago, and I've been working, so I haven't heard it.
Oh, my God.
So I'll hear it with you.
I know. And for the rest of you, you'll have to wait a little longer, but it's coming. Yeah, October, The Lonely, The Lonesome, and The Gone. That's a heavy title.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's loaded. There's a lot to think about there. Yeah. Cool. Well, Leanne, thanks so much for coming on the show. We appreciate it.
Very enjoyable. Thank you.
I ask you if you mean it. You say yes, I knew. Either I'm a fool for asking, or you belong in Hollywood. Either I'm a fool for asking, or you belong in Hollywood.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.